This week in KMA Land, severe storms seize KMA Land. High winds swallow Red Oak. Tornadoes torment Taylor and Ringgold counties. Heavy rain swamps northwest Missouri. Sirens malfunction in Page County. Shen water testing violations disclosed and will mark the end of an era in radio broadcasting. I'm Mike Peterson. It was the four-day weekend nobody wanted. For four straight nights, severe weather hammered KMA Land with a wide range of calamities. Tornadoes in southeast Nebraska and southwest Iowa, damaging winds in Montgomery County, and severe flooding in northwest Missouri. It all started last Friday evening when significant straight-line winds rolled through southwest Iowa, dealing major tree damage and power outages across the region. The National Weather Service office in Valley, Nebraska, issued severe thunderstorm warnings for a pair of cells developing in southeast Nebraska a little before 6 p.m., before the storms pushed their way further into southwest Iowa. Laurel McCoy is a meteorologist of the Weather Service's Valley, Nebraska office. McCoy tells KMA News the storms continued to intensify into a bow echo as they moved east, dealing significant tree damage.
Essentially a line of storms that produce pretty good damaging winds, and we had several reports of damaging winds down near Fremont, Red Oak, that area where we saw anywhere up to 74 miles an hour in several reports of wind damage along basically a line from Plattsmouth to Villisca to Corning. So just a pretty good storm that rolled through southwest Iowa and had a lot of wind and a couple quarter-sized hail reports with that too.
Montgomery County took the brunt of the storm as straight-line winds knocked down trees and power lines all over Red Oak, sparking numerous structure fires in the community. Red Oak City Administrator Lisa Cotter says the tree damage dealt by the storms was widespread throughout the community. The crews from City and MidAmerican Energy working through the weekend on cleanup efforts.
We've had a significant number of residents obviously transporting their own tree debris to our burn pile, which has been quite the campfire over there. It's a nice fire burning and trying to deal with all that debris before it gets out of control too big. So if anybody can bring it themselves, we will offer curbside pickup after we get through tonight.
Red Oak fire officials reported the first house fire came in shortly after 6:50 p.m. at 2nd and Grimes, before another house fire at around 6:55 p.m. in the 1200 block of Hammond Street, and a third residential structure fire at 6th and Elm Streets. Connor commended the response from fire departments throughout the county and residents who helped their neighbors.
The first call came in for fire. 5 minutes later, the second call came in, and then about 20 minutes later was the third and most significant of the three structure fires. So we did have everybody from the county responding. We certainly appreciate everyone's, you know, mutual aid that happened during the evening. And then, of course, you know, community comes together at times like this. This is where we see the best in humans, that people are helping their neighbors. There's young people out asking if anybody needed help with tree removal, things like that.
Speaking at Tuesday's Red Oak City Council meeting, Cotter says lightning apparently struck some city facilities, including the off-site building near the wastewater treatment plant that controls a lot of the wastewater pumps.
When the power finally went back on, the screen was shot. You could still read it, but it wasn't anything that Clint would tell it to do. It was not doing what it was supposed to do. Thankfully, they have emergency crews for electric pump out of Des Moines and the CAT people that it's a Caterpillar generator. And so they came down and got us back to operational. Otherwise, we would have just had to stand there and manually do everything.
Connor says crews also believe the lift station on the south side of town was struck by lightning and was inoperable for a short period of time. Honor adds two trees fell onto City Hall and a third tree taken down by a local contractor as a precaution ahead of the possibility of more severe weather Monday evening.
Yesterday, a gentleman came in out of the front. We don't usually go out the front door, but there was a huge crack down the main tree that's in front of the front door. So Justin Miner quickly came and just got it down. So I thought, well, this is all we need now. It's going to land on City Hall and we'll have a hole in the roof. So he quick got that down before the anticipated non-eventful night that we had, thankfully, last night.
Connor adds Saturday's severe storms brought large hail that damaged some of the roof of the wastewater treatment plant and vehicles at the law enforcement center. Otter says City Hall staff issued 11 peddler's permits Monday for roof contractors. Permits are required for businesses to go door-to-door in the community. She says the permits require businesses to have identification, be signed up with the Secretary of State for Business in Iowa, have a contractor's license, and be bonded and insured. She notes the businesses are also required to carry proof of their permits while going door-to-door. A list of the approved contractors is available on the city's Facebook page. Well, severe weather returned on Saturday, touching off a possible tornado in Taylor County. National Weather Service officials issued a tornado warning for central Taylor County after a radar indicated rotation appearing shortly after 5:50 p.m., roughly 6 miles north of Bedford Saturday. Andrew Ansorgi is a meteorologist with the Weather Service's Johnston office. Ansorgi told KMA News reports came in from the spotter network of a possible tornado on the ground 1 mile southeast of Gravity.
We saw quite a few storms move across Taylor and Ringgold County on Saturday night. Very slow-moving and very erratic storm motions, but we did see, we were watching Storm Spotter, Storm Chaser video down there, and we did see a brief tornado, looked like a tornado that touched down the area.
An additional Storm Chaser report of a tornado came in 1 mile southeast of Gravity as the storm continued to push east, with tornado warnings extending into western Ringgold County due to radar-identified rotation. Well, as of Monday morning, Ansorgi says the tornadic thunderstorm appeared to deal out little damage.
Outside of those initial tornado reports, we haven't heard of any damage reports at this time. And so we don't know of any, haven't given an official EF rating yet or enhanced Richter scale rating. That'll be something that we'll be doing in the coming days as we continue post-event cleanup.
The siege of severe weather ended Monday afternoon and evening with an exclamation point as tornadoes and severe storms danced all over KMA land. Numerous tornado warnings were issued in southeast Nebraska with at least one reported tornado in Richardson County. Richardson County EMA Director Brian Kirkendall told KMA News the tornado briefly touched down southwest of Salem in the southeastern portion of the county at around 5 p.m., The tornado then lifted as it passed near Salem and then touched down again as it continued northeast.
And it touched down for about 30 or 40 seconds and then picked back up. And after it got over Salem and it was on a northeast track, it touched back down and it impacted, I believe, four different farmsteads. And about, it was on the ground for about 4 miles.
Fortunately, Kirkendall says no injuries reported in any of the farmsteads, many of which suffered structural damage.
I know there's one big implement shed that was destroyed and several garages. I don't believe there was any houses that were completely destroyed. There was one house that a large tree fell on. But we are still assessing damages at this point.
Kirkendall says much of the wind damage from Monday's storm was concentrated around the path of the tornado.
We have a lot of utility poles that were damaged, but that was most of those are in the track of the tornado, or is where those utility poles are down.
And heavy damage and power outages reported in Auburn and parts of Nemaha County in southeast Nebraska. Ringgold and Taylor counties were once again victimized by severe weather. According to reports to the National Weather Service's Storm Prediction Center, train spotters confirmed a tornado 5 miles west-northwest of Athelstan in Taylor County between 6:30 and 6:40 p.m. before Ringgold County emergency management officials confirmed what they believed to be a tornado on the ground near Benton shortly before 7 p.m. Ringgold County Emergency Management Director Melissa Starr.
We'll be here to kind of discuss and see what their thoughts are. But we did sound our sirens at one point. It ended up being we sounded different areas separately just due to the storm being a slow-moving storm. Obviously, you could see on radar throughout that it was a lot of rotation and a lot of just rain wrap rotation at that.
As Stark says, damage reports in the county were numerous.
We did receive reports of some sheds and outbuildings that were damaged. We are still assessing those damages at this time. After our warnings and assessments on the ground as quickly as we could, we did start to have some flooding.
Well, the severe wind threat dissipated by around 8 p.m. Stark says Ringgold County was among those placed under a flash flood warning due to the heavy rains that came along with the storms. Stark says flooding was widespread across the county, including in and around Mount Air.
Southwest is where it probably started. City of Mount Air had some flooding pretty badly. It seemed to kind of correct itself pretty quickly, but we do have some homes that have water still in them. I know when it was coming down and pouring pretty badly, there were reports of people in a little bit of standing water in their homes. We did have a car that was also submerged in some water right off of our main Highway 2, and that was just a low spot that happened to collect rain very, very quickly.
Taylor County Emergency Management Director Belinda Ogle told KMA News they also received some initial damage reports between Bedford and Blockton. No storm-related injuries reported by either county. Flash flooding was also the main nemesis left by severe weather in northwest Missouri. Fields and streams were flooded and some roads closed following Monday's severe weather rolling through the region. Atchison County Emergency Management Coordinator Rhonda Wiley told KMA News her county expected severe weather after the storms that walloped southeast Nebraska touched off tornado and severe thunderstorm warnings.
If you have a tornado warning, you'll likely have one area maybe that you have to sound sirens, and we literally had tornado warnings for all areas within our county yesterday, and all sirens were utilized in order to cover all the tornado warnings. It was a crazy evening, needless to say.
Though one possible tornado touchdown was reported in the southern portion of the county, Wiley says it wasn't confirmed. She says the biggest problem was heavy rains causing flash flooding in parts of the county.
The Tarkio River has overflowed in a few areas, road closure south of Tarkio, like you're headed to Fairfax on 59, and that road is closed. We have one of the road closures, the highway up by Westboro. So we've had a lot of water damage.
Likewise, Nottoway County experienced heavy flooding from the storms. In Page County, the biggest problem involved a malfunction in the county's siren system, in which sirens failed to sound in two communities. County Emergency Management Coordinator Jill Harvey confirmed sirens failed to sound in Clarinda and Brattyville, communities that were under tornado warnings issued by the National Weather Service early Monday evening. Harvey tells KMA News the problem involved a power failure in one of two ways sirens are activated.
One uses a microwave system and one is a different system that's tied into our radio system. So we've had some issues in the past. Sometimes we have issues with internet connectivity and sometimes we have power failures. This one happened to be a power failure. I'm guessing at some point in time we had a power flash down in our dispatch center, and the backup to the sirens equipment came on temporarily, and then it just never reset itself, and we did not realize that.
Though no tornado touchdowns were confirmed in the county, Harvey says sirens were activated in both communities as a precaution. Harvey says her office is addressing siren issues.
We are working on doing some upgrades to our systems, and then hopefully with the move in hopefully July, we'll get to move our 911 center out to the new jail. Some of that will be hopefully eliminated with upgrades to our system.
Shenandoah officials this week informed residents about another water issue, this one involving disclosed water testing violations. City officials Tuesday released a public notification indicating it violated a drinking water standard over the past year. City Water Superintendent Tim Martin tells KMA News the city is required to send in 6 samples at designated sites for coliform testing to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources each month to determine whether pathogens exist in the water.
We have to send in 3 one week and 3 another week. And we found out that the lab received the first three in March of this year, and they failed to process the test, and then they failed to notify me that they weren't processed. In April, we discovered that.
Martin says the city notified the DNR the samples weren't tested. As a result, he says the city is switching testing labs from Microbac Labs in Newton to Midwest Laboratories in Omaha beginning in May. Martin was asked whether residents should be concerned about the quality of the city's drinking water.
Not at this time.
He adds the city takes additional tests to ensure the safety of the city's drinking water, such as free chlorine residual testing every 24 hours.
What free chlorine residual is a residual of chlorine in the water that is constant, that is there to actively disinfect or remove any pathogens or contaminants that might enter the water. Unlike bottled water or other types of water, this is, has a residual in it to constantly disinfect.
Martin says the city faces no sanctions from DNR officials who consider the matter closed. Anyone with questions should contact Tim Martin at the Shenandoah Water Department, 712-246-3372, or email tmartin@shenandoahiowa.net. A copy of the city's public notification is available with the web story at kmaland.com. Besides the aforementioned storm damage, Red Oak officials confronted a water issue of their own this week, one delaying the opening of the city's outdoor pool. Red Oak City Administrator Lisa Cotter updated the Red Oak City Council at its meeting this week on the situation with the city's outdoor pool. Plans originally called for opening the facility May 29th. However, Cotter says city crews have been attempting to address a significant leak at the pool for the last month. But when they went to fill up the pool this past weekend, she says it continued to lose water.
We're working on the pool, like everything that we're doing to try and test where the leak is happening. But we thought that we had it fixed. We replaced 12 valves. We've tested. We've done pressure testing in the pipes. We've done dye testing. You know, you put dye in the water and see if it gets sucked to a certain place. Nothing is coming. So we filled it back up over the weekend, and it immediately started dropping water, like 4 inches in a couple hours.
Connor says while the necessary staff training ahead of the pool's opening is still scheduled, the pool is being drained in hopes of finding the leak.
It has slowed. So obviously, if it stops, then you know that wherever the problem is above that point. So Georgiana is going to have to, you know, I think we'll still have the kids come in and do their training so that whenever we're ready to go. But there will be, even if we figured it out tomorrow, we still have time that we need. We're supposed to be next week, Friday.
And Connor says they've also been in touch with some of the contractors who helped build the updated pool and facility, who then provided additional contacts, and with Water and Wastewater Superintendent Clint Rowland about ways to identify the issue.
So he gave me three names of guys that work in the Chicagoland area, and they've been on the phone with Clint today. And there's just nobody around that can, I don't know. And the guy that I finally got a hold of through Gino is a gentleman that actually worked on the pool back in 19. So he knows the pool well.
Connor says an attempt to camera the piping proved difficult due to the number of 90-degree turns in the piping. City officials say they will provide more updates in the pool and a potential opening as more information becomes available. Montgomery County officials may review a proposed ordinance regulating carbon pipeline projects following a recent development. Last week, officials with Summit Carbon Solutions announced they have submitted a revised filing with the Iowa Utilities Commission, removing certain pipeline route segments. Company officials say the updated filing would remove proposed routes in Shelby, Pottawatomie, Montgomery, Adams, Page, Fremont, Mitchell, and Worth counties, ultimately excluding more than 400 landowners from the project footprint and reducing the overall scope by about 200 miles. Still including 27 ethanol plants in Iowa, the new route excludes 4 plants, including Green Plains, Shenandoah, and Poet Corning. West Township resident Jan Norris was one of the project's more vocal critics. Speaking at Tuesday's Montgomery County Board of Supervisors meeting, Norris says a route of nearly 800 miles remains, all north of Interstate 80.
So for us, it appears there will be no CO2 pipeline at this time. However, Summit's press release leaves all options open, saying they will continue to evaluate future expansion opportunities and additional ethanol facilities in future phases.
Norris, who is a Democratic candidate for Montgomery County's 4th District Supervisor's seat, says the pause in the project is an opportunity for counties no longer affected to reevaluate ordinances, approve them without company threats, and incorporate court rulings.
I have never asked counties to stop the pipeline, only to act in the best interest of the people. Fortunately, at this time, it appears the immediate threat has been removed. But more projects are coming our way. Wind, solar, and now Iowa is in the crosshairs for hydrogen drilling. In fact, a forced pooling bill was passed in the last days of session that would force non-consenting landowners to participate. And data centers appear to be popping up all across the U.S. It behooves our local officials to be proactive.
Norris made similar comments at Tuesday's Page County Board of Supervisors meeting. Back in July 2023, the supervisors approved a resolution not to take action on a proposed carbon pipeline ordinance after Summit sued Shelby County for taking similar action. But with the recent change in the Midwest Express pipeline project plans, Supervisor Bryant Amos suggested it's time for the county zoning board to review the proposed ordinance.
You know, this is the time. If we're going to do an ordinance, we're not in a battle. As Jan alluded to, it is the time to try to put something together.
If we can.
Amos adds Montgomery County's ordinance was similar to that of Shelby County's. In January of this year, the U.S. Supreme Court denied Shelby and Story County's appeal of the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals 2024 ruling, upholding a lower court's order barring counties from implementing ordinances regulating such projects. Well, Mills County officials plan to alter a reduced speed limit along a county road. By a 2-0 vote Tuesday morning, the county's Board of Supervisors approved a resolution to alter the reduced speed limit along 221st Street at Barris Road from 35 to 45 miles per hour. And back in February, the board implemented the reduced speed limit from 55 miles per hour due to a dirt extraction operation with an entrance off 221st Street. Mills County Engineer Jacob Farrow says the county recently heard concerns over inconsistencies among drivers adhering to the reduced speed limit and speed discrepancies between vehicles. He says that prompted discussion between secondary roads and the sheriff's office.
We've driven it a number of times. I sat there and watched cars come by, and it is hard for cars to get down to 35. I think a lot of them, you slow down, they're not getting close to that 35. Even myself driving it, you have to really kind of, I guess, almost force yourself, because if you're just letting up the gas and then coasting down, you're probably in that 45 range.
Farrell adds they suggested 45 miles per hour to slow traffic but reduce possible speed differences between vehicles. Farrell adds heavy truck traffic has greatly decreased along 221st.
So I think 35 makes a lot of sense when there is a lot of heavy truck traffic there and they're turning. We're in a period right now where they're, I don't think they are hauling, and so that makes it even more difficult for people to look now. 45, and at least gets people slow down, and then they're looking. If there is a truck, then obviously they're going to slow down so that they need to.
The board implemented a similar reduced speed limit along a portion of 195th Street between Bungie Avenue and U.S. Highway 34 for a similar dirt extraction operation. Another Memorial Day weekend is underway, and that means massive amounts of traffic along KMA land highways and interstates. AAA projects that almost 4 million people from this region will travel at least 50 miles from home during the unofficial start of summer this weekend, including more than 3 million motorists. The Governor's Traffic Safety Bureau also recently began partnering with law enforcement across the state on a click-it or a ticket highly visibility enforcement effort that runs through May 31st. Trooper Ryan DeVault of the Iowa State Patrol's Counts Bluffs Post told KMA News that higher traffic volumes mean motorists should take the necessary safety precautions.
You know, the biggest thing is make sure you're putting that seatbelt on. It's the safest thing you can do to protect yourself from serious injury or death in a crash. And I think last year we were at like 42% or around there of our fatalities did not have their seatbelt on. So just encourage motorists, take that 2 seconds it takes to reach up there and buckle up that seatbelt. That way, if you are involved in a crash, you know, you obviously increase your chances of survival.
As of Tuesday, 101 motorists had lost their lives in Iowa roadways, which is up nearly 22% from this time last year, with over 32% not wearing a seatbelt. Vault says motorists should also plan ahead and give themselves plenty of time to reach their destinations, particularly as road construction season gets into full gear.
You know, there may be a detour that takes you 8 miles out of your way, not necessarily just a road closure. So thinking ahead that, you know, there could be some hiccups and some road bumps along there with the Iowa road construction. We want people to plan ahead, leave early. That way they're not trying to push it. And then obviously slowing down, obeying the speed limits.
Also part of planning ahead is avoiding drunk or impaired driving. He says anyone planning to partake in any drinking during the weekend celebrations should designate a sober driver. Finally, you may have noticed an unusual sound at the beginning of this week's program. This sound, to be exact. Lovers of broadcasting history will recognize that as one of the many sounders used by CBS Radio News. Sadly, that sound with others used in the network will no longer be heard because yesterday was the last day of operations for the venerable radio network after almost 100 years. About 2 months ago, CBS officials opted to eliminate the network's radio news operation, citing budget concerns. Though KMA was never a CBS affiliate, this reporter, and no doubt others in the station's news department, were influenced by the long list of luminaries gracing the CBS airwaves. Legends like Edward R. Murrow and Eric Severide, Walter Cronkite and Douglas Edwards, Charles Collingwood and Dan Rather, Alan Jackson and Reed Collins, Charles Osgood and Christopher Glenn, many, many more. The list goes on. At the very least, the end of CBS Radio News means the loss of another reliable news source in this country, where news deserts are unfortunately growing and where Facebook and so-called buzz feeds are poor substitutes. To Ed, Walter, Doug, Dan, Alan, and all CBS Radio News staffers, past and present, thank you for your services. You will be missed. Mike Peterson, KMA News.